Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource their regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality improvement, risk management, emergency and infection control programs, run their meetings, develop education programs, and always be prepared for surveys.
Welcome to episode 59 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for June 24th, 2019. We're recording from the Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies Annual Corporate Retreat on Loon Lake in Chestertown, New York. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS, and I'm here with John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and one of the leading experts in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry, and the author and co-author of over 10 books about the ASC industry, including the Survey Guide for ASCs. John speaks frequently at both national and state ASC meetings on a wide variety of topics. Also joining us for this episode are Alex Borneman, Director of Operations for AHS, Jenna Alvarez, Senior Nurse Consultant, and Zach Kalaridis, Senior Consultant for AHS. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Absolutely.
They're so shy. So this is the Wednesday, the last day of our retreat, and we are speaking from the living room table.
Well, there's two
combined
living rooms
with the card table.
Makes it kind of complicated.
So what we did is we do this every year. This is our second year doing a retreat, so I guess it's annual now. And this time we rented an Airbnb. Might be the last year doing that, because we have six bedrooms, I think, and we have six people, and I mean six units, so it's been a little tight.
There's like 15 beds, I swear. But,
that's right.
You know,
but there are an awful lot of beds in each of the rooms, right?
We kind of need our own privacy.
So, but we just finished the retreat about 3 o'clock. It's now 4 o'clock. Alex let us out a little early. Alex is kind of the facilitator for the retreat every year, mm-hmm. and he keeps us, shall we say, very focused.
Monday was a 12-hour day.
Yeah, we've got a lot of content that we want to jam-pack in. And a lot of what we've talked about is actually requests from the employees themselves. So that means we've gotten a lot of feedback as to what they want to hear, which is great.
And you can spread the blame if it was was a very busy time. But I thought it actually worked out really well this time.
It did.
I thought there was just a lot of things addressed, and we all got to trade ideas and talk back and forth. And I thought it was very useful.
Well, and it's also nice just to get away from the phone. We've had a lot of internet problems here. We also had a lot of cell phone coverage. Like, we have to go to Alex's balcony in his room in order to get decent cell
phone. And hook up to his phone. And do a special dance.
Any big guy.
So we really are up and out of the way here in the Adirondacks. But it is nice in a way that we can't be that accessible. Mm-hmm. And I think I've certainly enjoyed the time, and I feel like we've all walked away. Zach, this is new to you. You weren't here last year or weren't in our retreat, so you're our newest member.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I had a lot of fun, yeah.
By the way, doesn't he have a great radio voice?
Thank you.
We decided to replace our second intro with him, so just talk.
No pressure.
Hopefully it sounds somewhat intelligent.
Well, that would make the rest of us look really bad. So
last year from the retreat we had Mauricio with his
Paraguayan
accent. So now this year we get Zach.
So one thing that we wanted to talk about while we're all together here is we're recording on the weekend after and the week following the New York State Association meeting. And we are going to publish a special New York State Association podcast, which will have a lot of content specifically from there. But I just wanted everybody's observations from the State Association meeting. I should point out, we kind of have to say that there was a great meeting because we're the ones that kind of organized it and staffed the registration booth. So we were quite involved in it. And Jenna, I don't even know if you have anything to say about the conference, because you pretty much were at the registration desk the entire time.
But I got to see all of my favorite people from the ASC industry in New York State, so I wasn't too upset.
I'll tell you, my ego took a bit of a hit this week because one of our clients came up to us and said, "My God, your daughter is so smart. She knows so much. She's incredible to work with." And I want to say, but what about me? You know, I'm the guy that's on the headline here. So you really impressed them. So I don't know. I don't know what you did to sweet talk them, but anyway, they're very satisfied with the work that you do. So let's just go around the table here and kind of talk about some takeaways. Alex, why don't you start?
Yeah, I think the conference went off great. Obviously, it was a beautiful venue, too.
We were at the Gideon Putnam. Yeah. Yep. So, Alex, you actually, for the first time, spoke in front of a major ASC audience, and you did a session with myself and our dear friend Missy Empey, who's a CPA. Why don't you talk a little bit about what we talked about in the session? Some of it is only for New York State, but there are some stuff that was general.
Yeah, one part that we talked about that was pretty general was the fact that all across the nation, there's a possibility that cost reports are coming soon for everyone.
Right. MedPAC has recommended that. Ambulatory surgery centers have cost reports, just like really every other major provider, such as nursing homes, home health agencies, and hospitals. It hasn't yet to be implemented, but you're right. It could be something implemented in the future.
Yeah. And so what we do in New York State for the cost reports is we every year have to submit a report on the financials of the organization, including ownership information. And it also is combined with audited financial statements.
Right.
That we have to submit alongside it. So it's a very heavy burden. And a lot of ASCs struggle with meeting that.
And it's expensive.
Especially the audit portion.
Right. So we had given them some advice on how to hire an auditor, what to do to try to find a good price for it. Audits can be anywhere from 12 to, heavens, one of our clients in New York City paid $50,000 for an audit, which is a pretty heavy burden for small operations like this. We know we have one right now that is really struggling to figure out how, they're not even making money right now. How are they going to be able to afford this? And of course, in New York State, you don't have a choice. You have to have audited financial statements. You have to file a cost report. So coming to a state near you, potentially in the future. Now, I should state that we've been working with the ASC Association. ASC Association has been working with CMS, and we've been successful to date in kind of proving that it would not be very beneficial. By the way, a little bit about cost reports. Cost reports are a throwback to the 70s when cost-based reimbursement was the norm. And they were meant to identify what the costs of doing business were, and Medicare reimbursement rates were based upon that. It's antiquated. Some of these forms haven't been updated in literally 30 years.
And now the name's a bit of a misnomer.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah, exactly. As we pointed out, the cost report really isn't used for determining costs anymore. It doesn't have anything to do with the reimbursement. It's used really to set the reimbursement between the state and the federal government with the Medicaid reimbursement. So, but it was a good session. I think people really kind of got a good overview of what it would like to have an audit. And there are many other reasons that you might decide to have an audit, including your bank requiring you to as part of the conditions of your loan documents. Or as in my case, when I was an administrator, I insisted on having an audit done because it helped protect me. Really having somebody watching over your shoulders to make sure that, your financial statements have been audited by somebody else and that, that there's a double check helps to protect the administrator. So something to think about. By the way, I was noticing we do have some background noise. We're not recording in our studio like we do when we're back in Rochester here. So we have some background noise. And because we have never had this many microphones hooked up, there's a little bit of distortion. So I apologize to our audience. So, Zach, this was your first conference, as we said. Anything really stand out for you?
I just enjoyed, being at the conference, learning about more of the industry in general from a lot of different perspectives. Leading up to the, days and weeks before the conference, I got to correspond with a lot of the individuals who were going to be speaking, collecting mm-hmm. their information. And then it was actually nice to meet them face-to-face after having never met them before.
Yeah.
One of the people I met was Tom Salamone. I had emailed with him back and forth. It was nice to meet him in person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love hearing him speak because he's, he's from the city. He's got this very Italian way of speaking that's just so entertaining. Mm-hmm. I just I only got to say for some of his session, but, you know, because I was running around making sure that everything was running okay. But, I poke my head in every once in a while and just, like, sit there in awe and, like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah, I had a lot of good things.
Safety, so.
Yeah. People love to hear him speak.
I know, I had so many good reviews or people telling me good things about him, and I had never heard him speak. I've talked to him, and I love talking to him because he's just such a great guy. But
well, and we've been working with Tom a bit recently with some of our surveys where life safety has been a huge item for a lot of folks.
Yeah, and he spent quite a bit of time during his session talking about the electrical systems. And we know right now that, and this is an important thing for our listeners, is that if you've been squeaking by with a Type 3 system, meaning that you have a generator with branches of service that are generally not broken down into the three specific branches required by an FPA 99, that is life safety, critical branch, and the equipment branch, you're probably not going to pass your next survey. And indeed, two of our centers had surveys recently, and they have been told that they have to replace their Type 3 system with a Type 2 system, which is a very expensive process for them. So, and Tom talked quite a bit about, you know, the requirements and the various types of testing that needs to be done for that. And I think he scared a lot of people because certainly a lot of the people there, of course, were from the city where, you know, a lot of these individuals work in surgery centers that are located in a high rise that they really can't put a diesel generator in there very easily. So this could be a significant problem for many of them. So, Jenna, you spent quite a bit of time with Lori Rodericks, who is our Director of Clinical Services, and she's recently CAPE certified, and she did two sessions for infection control. Do you want to talk a little bit about those sessions?
Yeah, so Lori's one of my favorite speakers because she's hilarious. So she did one session on the role of the infection preventionist, and a lot of it was spent actually talking about developing an effective infection control program.
Right.
And the role of everyone else in the center as well in having an effective infection control program. And then the second session that she did, I thought was really good, was on doing a surgical site infection investigation, which I don't think it's talked about very often, or at least, you know,
That's a very good point. I just assume there really aren't a lot of infections in a safe ASA.
I feel like I have seen the role of the infection preventionist at every single conference I've ever been to. And I mean, it's good. It's useful, especially for new people. And you always learn something new, but it was good to see something fresh and new, I guess.
Right.
And she gave some really great resources, I think, to, you know, make sure that you're thinking about all the different contributing factors that could possibly go into an infection, because I think a lot of times people struggle if it's not obvious.
I think one of the issues that often comes up when they have an infection, the infection preventionist and the doctor spend so much time trying to prove that it's not an infection rather than trying to figure out if there were any potential causes of it. That exercise, I think that's what you're saying, well, Lori was talking about.
Or even, did you do the best practice?
Right.
I know one of my centers recently, they had an infection in a gynecologic procedure. We had it peer reviewed afterwards just to see, are we missing something? And the peer reviewer took the time to do a lot of investigation into best practices and actually changed their prescribing practices preoperatively as a result of this. And, you know, that's something that we should look at, you know. What preoperative antibiotics were used? Were they given at the right time? You know, is there a better practice?
Right. And of course, that just is exactly what we should be doing with quality improvement. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to bury, an infection under the carpet, try to find a potential solution to it. And if I remember right, there really wasn't, I mean, the infection wasn't severe in this case, right?
No, it was minor infection. Yeah. It resolved with antibiotics. But it could have been prevented. Possibly.
Right. And now they came up with a better way of doing things, which is a good demonstration of quality improvement. Very good. I did want to follow up with that. We had a board meeting after the conference, and we talked about how we're going to develop a infection prevention conference, specifically a one-day conference for people in New York. We're going to invite all the surrounding states, by the way, also to come. And I don't know when this will be yet, but we're working on this. One of the things that all of us around the table have had a bit of concern about is that when we get a new infection preventionist or a new nurse manager who has to take on the role of infection prevention, they don't have a lot of options with regard to training. So we all use the ARN course, which is an online course, about 6 credit hours. It's a good course, but it's really not enough to get you prepared for this position. And so what we're trying to do is develop a full day session, probably a good 8 hours with a couple speakers to go through the responsibilities of infection preventionists and what you would do, the different types of surveillance that needs to be done, and just those very things that Lori talked about during this, the two sessions she did in New York. But they went over so well, we decided this would be a good thing. And then we'll give a certificate at the end that basically says that they've received a lot of training specifically on ASC infection prevention management. So let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about some of the things that we learned and talked about during our retreat this year. Okay, and we're back, and I thought we would spend some time talking about some of the takeaways from the conference this year. Now, Jenny, you just said that you're going to pick on Alex for what?
His spreadsheets.
Yeah, so I think one of the big takeaways...
love of Microsoft Excel.
So one of the big takeaways is that Excel is your friend and can help you in quality improvement and risk management, right, Alex?
Yeah, as long as you know how to use it. Now, if you want to know...
if we just pay attention to the directions Alex gives us.
Now, here's 10 minutes of me speaking on Microsoft Excel.
Actually, hey, very helpful.
I learned how to do a pivot table, and I was very excited about the different things that I can actually do with that now.
I learned what a pivot table is. I'm on the first step.
And the fact that you would always have Alex do your pivot tables for you.
Well, I learned that I'm still never going to learn how to do conditional formatting.
Yes.
And that's definitely going to be a phone call to Alex type of thing.
So that.
But I'm really good at doing my formulas now, so I'm really proud of myself. You have to understand something about Alex and Excel. He is the type of person who goes home after work. He gets on his other laptop and works on his fun spreadsheets that are unrelated to work. So he has one for his football league that he spends hours.
A lot more hours on that than he does for work.
Yeah. You guys can't see my quotation marks. Putting together. So that is why he has become our guru in the company whenever we have an Excel problem.
Right. And you like to pick on him a lot.
And I have to pick on him for it.
So I guess the big question is, why are we even talking about this on a podcast, number one, and why did we spend so much time talking about it during the conference?
It mostly comes down to quality improvement. A big part of quality improvement is collection of data.
Right.
And
tracking and trending.
Yep. And we have to have tools in order to actually manage that data,
right,
and then digest it and present it in a way that we can then get takeaways and move forward and improve our organization.
And as much as we tease you about it, really, you've come up with a way that it's very visual. All of the data that we need is right there. You can see if it went up or down or stayed the same. So
surveyors like it, and they can really quickly see, oh, okay, you guys are taking all of these incidents that you're tracking quarterly seriously, and you're watching the trends, or your hand hygiene, you know, they're like, what's happened here with your hand hygiene? It's going down. But I'm like, oh no, but look at this quarter, it's going up again. We did an in-service and look, you know, it's improved.
Right.
Or same with sharp safety. And, you know, we got cited at one of my centers recently for the same thing that this nurse manager works on every quarter. And unfortunately, they were not being good boys and girls at the center that day. But we know that we have an issue, and it's in our data, with asepsis and the wiping of the top of the vial before inserting a needle. And you can see that, and you can see everything that we've done to improve it. Unfortunately, in this situation, it didn't quite work. But
but the point is, it wasn't the surveyor finding it, and which is one of the things that, you know, we always say here is that you don't want to have the surveyor find something wrong. You want to be able to say, listen, we know it. We've been working on this, and
we take it seriously.
And we take it seriously, right? And that way, when they do find it happening, you can just say, well, this is what we have been fighting, and we'll keep working at it. you'll probably still get cited, but at least they're not going to be saying you didn't even know you weren't doing this right.
And then same thing, it's a great way to identify issues that could lead into a good quality QI study.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the way Alex has our spreadsheet set up, which is the conditional formatting that I don't understand, is that when percentages that should be going up go down, they turn red on the sheet and are bright, you know, in your mm-hmm. face. And when you improve, it is green on the sheet mm-hmm. and you say, oh, yay, we did a good job.
Yep.
But if you see red quarter after quarter after yeah. quarter, hey, look, we're having an issue mm-hmm. with wait time.
Right.
Or we're having an issue with doctors not washing their hands after removing their gloves.
Yeah.
What can we do about it? Do we need an in-service? Do we need to do a QI study? Do we need to, you know, put up a sign to say, hey, remember to wash your hands and
right.
remove your gloves? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it helps you identify quickly your issues in your center and areas that you can do an improvement project.
Well, and I think it's important to note that the reason that we have to worry about a track and train is because we don't have a lot of incidents in an ambulatory surgery center. For the most part, these are elective procedures. Patients are relatively healthy, and hopefully they're coming in, you know, without any major issues, and hopefully leaving without any major issues as a result of the nature of the procedure that's being done. So finding quality improvement opportunities is very difficult. Tracking and trending helps us to identify those things because we're able to look over a larger universe than just, you know, single incidents that occurred during the quarter. And I know we talk about this a lot, but it bears repeating. Quality improvement means that we identify things that are not going quite right. Every center, even the best run centers, are going to identify issues that need to be improved. And, you know, surveyors, when they come in and they just see quality improvement reports that say everything is okay, nothing is wrong here, are not going to believe that. And that's not a sign that you're trying to improve your operations. You keep lowering the bar until you find things that you can improve. So the best centers are those that are going to be looking at, you know, provide high quality care and then looking at ways to even improve that that a step further. So you just keep lowering the bar until you work on
infection control. Yes. We are constantly finding new things to surveil.
Right.
You know, we started off just doing our surveillance for hand hygiene and safe injection practices and your environmental rounds. But we've noticed with a lot of our centers, the surveillance of our sterile processing department mm-hmm. or the scope reprocessing department is needed.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when, you know, you have turnover rates where you want to make sure that your employees are all practicing at the same level.
Right. Mm-hmm. So let's switch gears a little bit. And a big part of what we did as our retreat was strategic planning, trying to figure out how we in our organization can provide services better. Obviously, our business is quality improvement. So a big part of what we try to do is look at the way we do things and try to improve upon the quality. So a big part of our conversation in the last 3 days was on strategic planning. So let's just talk about strategic planning in general, because most centers do not do this. The argument's always made, well, I'm too busy providing good patient care. Why do I need to spend the time to do strategic planning? And the simple answer to that is, we talked about, there's just a lot going on in the industry, a lot of changes. Hospitals are being more competitive right now with us. You know, we have now the threat of outpatient practices or office-based surgery. And, you know, with the political environment the way it is, we might be looking at single payer, we might be looking at Medicare, you know, for all type reimbursement, which could have a significant impact on our revenue streams, reducing those revenue streams and forcing us to make do with even less reimbursement than we get right now, which seems kind of impossible. So strategic plan helps you to figure out what you're going to do. How do you prepare for that? So a strategic plan starts with a, what do we call it? SWOT analysis, S-W-O-T. So the first two items, the S and the W, stand for internal issues. What are the strengths of the organization? You have great anesthesiologists. You have a fast turnover. You're located in a very convenient location for the patients. And you have, you know, a great staff. Weaknesses would be, you know, maybe you have a high turnover. Or you have, you're in a situation where a lot of your older nurses are going to be retiring soon and you need to bring up a new generation. And then the other two things in the SWOT analysis are OT, which are the external factors. What are your opportunities? What's going on in the industry? For example, we know that now we're going to be looking at total joints being able to be done in an ambulatory surgery setting. Maybe the movement away from hospitals or the shutdown in your community of hospitals provide an opportunity for doing more surgery and bringing more patients into your operation. And then last is the threats, again, external. What's going to happen to the industry? And as I talked about earlier, you know, the threats would be things like external threats such as, you know, changes in reimbursement. So now these things don't have to be formal. My master's degree is in strategic planning. So this is something I kind of live and breathe. But I've often said a strategic plan can even be on the back of a napkin. The whole concept here is we want to be able to at least sometime during the year sit down and talk about things. And for us in our company, we do this by going away on a retreat and getting away from kind of it all and locking people in a room with no internet, no telephone, and no television, by the way, and, you know, kind of forcing them to talk these things out. But these are all very good things for a surgery center, especially taking your senior leadership. Any observations from the team on this?
I think the retreat has been incredibly useful. You know, it's not only a time for team bonding, which I think is often underappreciated and underutilized as a strategy for preventing that high staff turnover and allowing the center to, you know, grow kind of naturally with a strong team around it.
Yeah, I mean, we have very high turnover in our business right now, and we've got to find some ways to improve that. And I think, well, let's face it, there's a lot of opportunities for nurses, right? My two nurses, mm-hmm. you know. You could be working, you know, in a lot of different environments, a lot of different opportunities are available to you. And, you know, why would you want to work 60 hours a week dealing with regulatory issues like we do in an outpatient setting if you don't have to, if there's other options available? And they certainly don't want to come to work in an environment where they're not appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Or heard. I think that's something I bring up a lot in all different situations. But I think you as the boss,
right.
you can say what you are hoping for, what you're planning. But then all of us also get to give some feedback.
Right.
And if we have questions.
Which you have been very willing to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Say what's important to me. So, you know, I think that makes a huge difference, feeling like you're taking the time to really want to get your team involved.
Well, right. And I know a lot of our administrators and nurse managers struggle with the interruptions throughout the day
mm-hmm.
when you don't get away somewhere,
right?
Even if it's just, you know, a conference room down the hall, or, you know,
I think that's why they love those conferences so much, is that they do it gives them an opportunity to talk to other people.
But really, yeah. I mean, I laugh sometimes because I'll go and visit one of my administrators, and, you know, she'll close the door, but then people will still try to get in, and so then she'll put a sign on the door, please do not disturb, or please knock, and then, you know, then people just still walk in, and then, you know, please see an assistant before coming in. They still come in. So I don't know what the solution is other than, you know, giant, like, bars across it.
That's why
you're the issue.
I was waiting for that from Alex.
you truly need to get off-site, and I can't overemphasize, and even if it's just a day. And what we do in the company is we do the three-day in the spring, and then we do another day during the Christmas holidays where it's a day or two when we get together. And, of course, we get together as a group. We should point, we don't have an office. All of us work out of our homes. We're a virtual company, and so communication is even more of a problem than it is in a surgery center setting. But I'll tell you, I think in many ways we communicate better than many of our clients do among themselves, you know, because we're on the phone with each other all the time.
I communicate between people at some of my clients more than they communicate
with each other. And again, we're not necessarily being critical here, but what's happening is they're so busy just working so hard mm-hmm. that they don't have the time to, you know, to improve that cooperation. So a couple pieces of advice, obviously, and this needs to come from the top. You know, the governing body needs to listen to the administrator. I talk an awful lot about governance and the importance of, you know, having a good administrator governing body relationship. And an administrator has to have a good relationship with the employees. And Sue, as you said, they've got to be able to listen. They've got to have some mechanisms for getting information back and forth. And maybe on a day-to-day basis, that's very difficult. But you should have a meeting at least once a month with your staff. What I used to do is I would get up early. I knew my nurse. nurses did this, but I would get up super early myself when I was an administrator. I'd go in and I'd meet them at, 6:30 in the morning. And we would have about a half hour once every 2 weeks, talk things out. And it was difficult because they were very willing to share with me what their thoughts were at that time. And I can tell you, I wasn't always enjoying that, but it was an extremely important thing to do.
And to make that right time, because when I worked in the hospital, we had the, I don't know if they called them team meetings, but the management could be there, but really the floor nurses, you were supposed to be there, but then you'd get called out for a patient and you really didn't take any part in it. And it was sort of just seemed like, okay, why are we pretending that we're really part of this? Because we really are. We can't be there. So to find that time when you give them that space and time to be involved.
Yeah. And then to that point, of course, the best time for our doctors are the first time in the morning. So taking some time away is inevitably going to get you into trouble with the physicians. But I remember the first surgery center I ran, I had this this nurse that worked with me, and she came from the hospital setting. And she insisted that every single Thursday morning from 6:30 to 7:30 was an in-service or a meeting. And the doctors fumed about this whole thing, but she insisted on that until the day she left. And of course, the day she left and a new nurse manager took over, it was gone. But during that time, she had a very good relationship with her nursing staff, and she definitely got a lot out of them. And there was a lot of good training, a lot of good interaction. So I think it's definitely well worth it to consider periodic meetings, even if it means taking away from some of the doctor's time. Mm-hmm. So the last thing I want to talk about was a topic that we all had quite a bit of fun with, which our clients will not have a lot of fun with. It's monthly exclusionary checks. So what we have been getting a lot of requests, especially in New York State, but it is in other states also, is for proof or for certification that all the employees and any of the providers have been the topic of a search in the exclusionary databases, and there are a series of databases, and we'll go over them in a second. So anybody that is providing services to Medicare through the managed care contracts or Medicaid through the managed care contracts fall under a section of the federal regulations. So this is actually Section 18.9D of the Medicare managed care contract. So basically, if you are participating in a Medicare managed care contract, your Medicare managed contract provider or payer is going to have proof from you that you are searching the exclusionary databases. We know that we always check, for example, the OIG database upon recredentialing of a provider, upon credentialing of a provider. But this section of the federal law for Medicaid managed care contracts requires any organizations that accept money through the Medicare program and the Medicaid program to search the database. So there are four monthly exclusion database searches that you need to do. And by the way, this is extremely onerous. I mean, it's going to take quite a bit of clerical time. It doesn't take long to do it, but if you got 20, 50, 100 providers, this could take an awful lot of time. So these are the four databases that you have to search on a monthly basis. The first one is the U.S. Office of Inspector General's list of excluded individuals and entities, and that's better known as the OIG-LEIE. And I'm going to provide links on the website to these databases for you to search, that we actually have the references. The second monthly exclusionary database that you have to search is the U.S. General Service Administration System for Award Management, the GSA-SAM, used to be known as the EPLS. And again, I'll provide the link. This is kind of funny because the chance of somebody in the healthcare field actually showing up on the SAM database is pretty small. These are people that have federal contracts with the U.S. government, basically, who have been excluded for some type of contractual issue. If you are in the state of New York, you also have to check the OMIG database, which is the Office of the Medicaid Inspector General, and that's called the OMIG Exclusionary Database. We only have the information here for New York State, but if you, anybody that provides Medicaid services in their state needs to do this check also. And then the last one is even funnier. It's the U.S. Department of Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or the OFAC. And these would be individuals that are excluded because of some, hiding money in foreign countries, I suspect, or, getting in trouble with foreign governments.
Especially that this is on a monthly basis.
Yes. It's overreaching. And, I mean, to be honest, I don't necessarily know how you would get caught. The fact of the matter is, some of your insurance companies are going to ask you to attest to this on an annual basis. So you could get yourself into a lot of trouble. And then there's annual monitoring. And the first one is on an annual basis, you should be checking the NPPES database, which is the database of the NPI numbers. And the second one I love. Okay,
so this is only annual.
I know. So the second one is the U.S. Social Security Administration's death master file. And by the way, here's the good news, is that you don't have to check this file if your doctor has died before 1935.
Yes, but if you notice them, they've been very quiet lately.
like 85 years. Yes.
So this is funny enough that you have to check to make sure that your doctor is not dead. But it's even worse because you have to pay for access to this. So I don't know, and I'm putting this on the public record here. I don't know what trouble I'm going to get in, but I just don't see that this is a reasonable thing to do. So I really just suggest that you take their pulse once a year. And if they're alive, then I would suspect that you probably don't have to check this.
You're probably in the clear.
However, I do know of some centers that have some questions about whether their doctors are dead.
Or have come back a zombie. I mean, I don't know. I guess you have to be extra careful.
So you're saying that this might tie into the zombie apocalypse issues. So. Well, this has been a lot of fun, guys. Very much enjoyed this last 3 days with you. We've actually been together for 7 days because we before we started the thing, we brought all of our spouses and significant others. And of course, in my case, was Sue. She was already here. But they came up. But we've had a lot of fun. And I think one of the things that's been very helpful is we've enjoyed doing some games together, cooking meals together. And I can't emphasize enough how these types of things, even in your center, you know, in my old center, we used to have... you know, cooking things where people would bring potluck or even cook you know, together. You know, we have barbecues outside and, you know, it was always a lot of fun to do things together like that.
And we have to throw out some kudos to Judy because some of us are on the keto diet.
Right.
And Judy made lasagna for keto people as well as some for the others.
Right.
And she made a cheesecake and cookies that were all so good. And she made them all ahead of time and brought them.
That's right.
It was wonderful.
She had to leave, unfortunately, early, so she can't be with us but for the podcast here. But definitely, thank you very much. And those of us that are on the keto diet, and by the way, 35 pounds myself.
And even those who are not on the keto diet really enjoyed that cheesecake.
That's right.
It was not a diet. Yeah. It didn't taste like diet. So.
Just for the record,
nice job.
I could do Judy's type of keto diet. I like my sugar way too much to give it.
Sugar and the lasagna. I've got the recipes.
Yeah, if Jenna were to lose 35 pounds, it would be nothing there.
We'd come find her.
Well, that's it. So thank you all for joining us on the podcast here. We'll take a short break and we'll come back with upcoming events.
John, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies is really growing fast. We've been adding employees steadily over the past 12 months. Can you tell the listeners what's been happening?
So clearly, this podcast has been very popular, thanks, of course, to you and me, because of our wonderful work here, and our infectious, I don't know if I should be using infectious personalities in a podcast here about infection control and various items, but definitely we're enjoying doing this, and certainly the word is getting out about the great things that we're doing at AHS. So recently, we added infection prevention consulting to our services and mentoring of infection control preventionists in the organizations, and that's being headed up by Lori Rodericks, who is our newly certified CAIP individual. So she has the Certified Ambulatory Infection Preventionist certification now, and she's always been doing infection control for us, but now she's got this new title. So she can do ongoing infection control consulting, particularly if you don't have a qualified IC person on staff. She can help you in following up on infection control issues. She can do mentoring of infection control staff. And she can do infection control and sterile processing competencies. And we've also enhanced our life safety services by adding Jim Masters to our staff. He is a life safety surveyor, and so he joins Alex Borneman, who is our director of operations, to be able to do various life safety surveys and consulting on life safety issues, as well as probably the most important thing is follow up on life safety citations. That's a very difficult area for many organizations to be able to deal with. You know, what happens when you get a life safety citation? How do you deal with that? So we now have that ability. And of course, our unique retainer-based regulatory services, where we help keep you on top of all the ASC regulatory requirements and always make sure that you are survey ready.
Let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry.
Every episode, we inform you of upcoming events. If you'd like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com.
We also want to remind you that the ASC Podcast with John Gailey is available to support your ASC association. John is available to speak, and we can record a podcast from your meeting.
The Florida State Association ASC's annual conference and trade show is July 17th to July 19th, 2019, at the Lowe's Sapphire Falls Resort at Universal Orlando.
The Georgia State ASC Association and the South Carolina State Association joint semi-annual meeting is August 15th through 16th at the DeSoto in Savannah, Georgia.
The California Ambulatory Surgery Association annual meeting is September 4th through the 6th, 2019 in Monterey Bay, California.
The Tennessee ASC Association's fall conference and trade show is September 26th to September 27th at the Hilton Memphis in Memphis, Tennessee.
The Indiana Federation of ASC's fall conference and trade show is October 18th, 2019 at the East Event Center in Carmel, Indiana.
The New York Metro ASC and Healthcare Management Symposium is November 1st, 2019 at the Marriott Marquis in the heart of Times Square.
The New York State Association of ASC's fall conference is in Tarrytown, New York on November 7th, 2019.
The Washington ASC Association's 2019 Annual Education Conference and Trade Show is November 14th and 15th at the Tulalip Resort and Spa in Tulalip, Washington. Well, that's it for this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Join us again, and please spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.